You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Around the NFL Podcast is still pissing off Angelo's.
From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's the Around the NFL Podcast. I'm Dan Hansis, Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. You know, we have a new intro because the opportunity to name drop the legend, Chris Wessling, at the top of every show is, it's an honor, quite frankly. And I love doing it, but it's the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, Around the NFL Podcast, duplicative.
Yeah, that's the writer in you and the editor, which, you know, Dan's an underrated writer, longtime, you know, journo.
A little backhanded compliment underrated. From Greg there. Okay, go ahead.
I'm just saying, no, I mean, there are people, true. And I've encountered them that don't realize that we write.
Right.
So it's good to point that out. That's where we came from. But yeah, it bothers you as a writer whenever you have the same word like twice in two
well,
sentences.
Well, see, I don't think it bothers every writer that's covering sports, but it should.
It should. I'm glad you mentioned Chris off the top here, too, because that reminds me to remind our listeners to check out Lakeisha's
feature
that we talked a lot about. We had Keisha on our Around the NFL broadcast, and I know a lot of our listeners saw that because she sent it out on social, but some of you haven't. We haven't talked about it on the podcast, and it was amazing what she did, and they are going to be airing a shorter version of it on game day morning this weekend, so that's cool.
That's great.
And but you can see the full version at Keisha's social handle.
Literally the director's cut. And, like, I mean, it's amazing. They played it also in the huge theater here at our workplace where we have watched a couple of terrible Sunday night football games for the most part.
Some not so good. The Lakeisha did such amazing work, and all the people behind the scenes that helped bring that to life. It was so well done. And Greg, you spoke for the pod on in the segment, which was excellent. And Nick Wessling spoke on behalf of the Wessling brothers, and that was wonderful. And we heard from the doctors and the surgeons that worked with Wes during his battle against cancer. So, yes. Check out, if you're watching NFL Network, check out the short version. Seek out the long one, because that is the way to go.
And we had a little on here.
It was a little untoward of Greg. I know he's going to say something nice, but to demand high fees to appear in the video, that felt, and no one else did, just Greg.
It was special to have Keisha here with us, and I hope we do on a podcast soon enough. But that's one benefit of, watching the long version. We got to talk about it with her afterwards, too, on that version.
Mark, I would say that Greg is an underrated talking head in like a sensitive piece like that. I would say,
as he's been
underrated is not a insult in any way. I just mean don't think of the Zeuser that way. He's he's a podcast guy. He's a TV personality. Our writing has unfortunately taken.
I mean,
a back
I
seat
you know
sometimes.
When Dan and I met, we were turn into the mill where you're doing 14 blogs a day. I do remember Dan the writer quite distinctly. I mean, he still exists.
I think about you as the writer.
I remember that. You guys
all the time.
You guys are both at your desks, and I was just standing behind you with a whip going like,
yeah, you were.
One day, when Mark and I do a spinoff show, it's just going to be about like the 2 years where Greg was our boss.
It's like four or five blogger. Terrell Pryor, now! He said something.
And we're not going to pull any punches. It's going to be the true, unvarnished story.
That Greg twice has done the whipping motion, but not the sound effect.
It's like he's expecting the drop to come in there.
Right, right. But it's like this is an audio.
It's like when Eli threw up the double middle finger and thought it would be blurred out in real time.
Sometimes things are just for you guys here. It's okay.
Right. And it's, you know, you're typically on the receiving end of that from what we know about your outside of work situation.
All right. Whoa. Okay. We'll get into that a little bit later. This is week 8. Here we go. We are almost at the midpoint of the season. Of course, this season is longer now. I think the branding of it, and dare we disrespect the branding of it, this is the biggest season ever.
That's one way to put it.
Purely in quantity. Although I think it's been a good season so far. I'd give it a solid B so far. What would you give the season through 7 weeks?
That's a good... B sounds about right.
B's
rock
fair.
Solid
B's
B.
Good. Bordering on B+.
Yeah, I don't know. The quarterbacks are great. I always think, you know, it's like a lot of young quarterbacks, a lot of points.
I mean, your personal fandom probably has to knock it down almost a full letter grade. It's just total terror.
London trip for me knocked it up to an A personally.
Personally. For me, like, everything leading up to Sunday kickoff was A+, and then the D- game. And then the Sunday game against the Patriots. Now we're getting into F territory.
Yeah.
But that's just me personally. So maybe I see the rest of the season as an A-, and it's a credit to the season that it's a B. I'm legitimately angry.
Well said.
All right, let's get into the games of week 8. You could check out the Thursday night recap. Packers-Cardinals. Speaking of a lot of talk, the biggest, the greatest Thursday night football game ever. Well, 6-0 against 7-0. 6-1 against 7-0. Yeah, we'll see. Check out Greg's recap. With special guest
Patrick Claibon.
Still in.
Oh, so he agreed. He came around to.
I didn't follow up with him, but he said yes in the moment.
it was an awkward enough request that I was there for.
It wasn't.
That I actually had to say to Greg.
He was thinking through what he had to do that day. Which day is that Thursday? Where am I? You know, that's what happens.
If you find yourself in a pinch, Greg, I will jump in and be your partner for the recap. I felt compelled. Based on the tone of the team.
I should revisit it because, Claibon's a friend. And at this point, we know enough that, like, asking a friend to do the podcast, that doesn't necessarily mean you're doing them a favor. They're doing you a favor. So I should revisit whether.
It's a little late to revisit it, to be honest. That was more like a follow up later in the day. Hey, man, sorry to put you on the spot there. If you have something else going on, let me know. And Dan already said he would jump in, so it's fine.
I thought about that. You know,
kickoff and
do I get credit
hours,
for thinking about sending that text? But I did forget.
Let's start with the primetime games to come later in the weekend. Let's start with a gorgeous game on Halloween night.
Love this.
Dallas Cowboys at Minnesota Vikings. The Cowboys coming off their bye week at 5-1, feeling good, looking good, playing good. And the Vikings are very hard to pin down. 3-3, also coming off their bye. We had Arif Hassan on from The Athletic last week, and we delved into all the drama around the Vikings who, you know, when we did that Fakakta exercise on Tuesday trying to pick a new team, the Vikings are a team I always enjoy following. But again, I am not getting into the pain rankings business. I'm not going from Jets to Vikings fan. That's a terrible situation. And people like Bonetta and everybody else saying, oh, bad job with the Chiefs. Oh, I might want to go to a franchise with a superstar quarterback that's going to the Hall of Fame and a great fan base and a winning culture.
Fair.
Oh, how absurd.
You deserve that.
It's a fair retort on your part.
You deserve it.
You were unmerciful. You know, we came after you and it
came
was unfair.
Hard after me. So anyway, so there you go. The Vikings, a tough 3-3 to figure out. Mark, where do you come down on this game? Because I think hanging over everything, and I think how you watched this game, especially in the early, the first half, how's Dak Prescott? How is that calf? Because remember, I had to check the notes. The backup quarterback behind Dak Prescott, does anybody know?
Well, there's a string of them.
Cooper Rush,
it's
right?
Cooper Rush who was thrown for 3 yards.
Ben DiNucci still in the house?
I don't know.
Somewhere?
Used to be your guy Mike White, now on the Jets.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. He's thrown for 3 yards in 5 years. So if Dak goes down, everything's finished. Your thoughts, Mark?
Well, it sounds like, you know, they said in quotes, he did a lot of work on Wednesday. He's doing it again today, and he's looked good. So, you know, there's real optimism that he can play, that he'll be himself, which they need him to be. And if he is, and this, you know, I get the Packers-Cardinals thing, but this is up there in that echelon of games because I think – for us, watching the Vikings, like from I've been typically down on the Vikings, and my interest in them is climbing because of who they are on offense. That you've got Clint Kubiak allowing Kirk Cousins to throw the ball about 40 times a game. Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, KJ Osborne, who's in the last month become one of the more exciting young wideouts. They're coming off their bye. Both teams are. Dalvin Cook is healthy. So it just is, unlike the Green Bay Cardinals game, it's like everyone sounds like they're good. Michael Gallup might be back. The one thing for me, though, if you're looking at where this could just turn into a bit of a train wreck for Minnesota, because to me it vibes high-scoring shootout that, like all Vikings games, go down to the end. They lost to the Browns, Bengals, and Cardinals by a combined 11 points. They lose close games.
Wow.
They win close games. Close fights, heartbreakers, that's just who they are. I expect this to go that way. But Patrick Peterson, who's played really well for Minnesota, out of the lineup, you're asking Cameron Dantzler to come in, who's not been a huge asset for them. Bashaud Breeland's been struggling. So you just look at what Dallas has on offense and you wonder, can they get to a point where they're suddenly up by 17 points going into the third quarter?
It's like every week that Dak has so many mismatches to pick from. And you're right, losing Peterson is key. It was bizarre that they benched Dantzler, who was their best cornerback a year ago, as a rookie. Seems like some sort of Mike Zimmer personal thing. Wasn't happy about his attitude. He's going to need him. These defenses have been underrated. Like, they're both top 10 DVOA, but underrated defenses still give up 30 points when they play a real deal offense. And I trust the Cowboys offense and Mike McCarthy actually to realize that we are an offensive team. Let's play to it. Like, I know Kirk Cousins is playing more free and he's had to throw a lot, but a lot of that's because they fall behind. When they get ahead, they kind of get into their little shell. They start running on first and second down, and they invite these close games when they don't need it. So I trust the Cowboys more to stay aggressive the whole game instead of just when they have the lead or when they're behind.
I think this is going to be – this is my prediction for – and it's not too bold, but game of the week. I think it sets up really well that the Cowboys are going to score points, but Minnesota has the ammunition to fire back with Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, a – healthy Dalvin Cook coming off the bye, and he's going to chew him up on the ground, I think. So we're going to have, a shootout here, and I kind of like the Vikings here. And I know
I do, too.
I just have a feeling that they are going to really show up in this game. Dalvin Cook had 143 yards and 31 touches before Minnesota's bye. So, the fact that he gets a chance now to get a blow, he's always banged up. He's had the ankle issues. He's going to come out well. So I like the Vikings in an upset here.
I want to be with you, but part of me that's really enjoyed this Kirk Cousins season, and I think the difference is he's throwing these balls up to Osborne and Jefferson when he could take the underneath stuff. He's getting aggressive. Is that, couldn't you see after all these games at 10 a.m. Pacific that he's playing well, that like here comes the primetime game and Cousins has a Cousin-like ending and everyone's like, oh, there's Kirk Cousins again. And
Didn't we get past that, though?
I know, I'm like in Cousins' corner. And I don't
You're in Cousins' corner.
I'm in Cousins' corner.
In the plexiglass box.
I've taken I don't want to take Wes's spot, but I want to be a kissing cousin. I'm gonna apply for membership. I've just enjoyed that. Yeah, guys can evolve, and I've enjoyed his verve this season.
I've been out on the kissing cousin thing.
Right.
So
he's had some verve. He's playing with a little verve. He's entertaining me. That's important.
I like the idea because that plexiglass cube that Kirk Cousins stays in, not to give everyone COVID because he won't get the jab. It's a little tight for two people, but Greg is a smaller framed man. You put Greg in there, he's got to strip down and grease up, but then we just slide him right into the cube with Kirk Cousins.
I don't think that's technically
how it would work. So it's
I don't think removing your clothes would open up that much extra space. That would be worth
Ricky,
it.
That's what you think.
If you remove the clothes, but also lather Greg up in grease,
getting flashbacks to the sideline of the London game where you were doing those sound effects in reference to something else. Okay. I'm gonna throw up.
Let's move on. Let's keep moving. I like working
here. It's technically how Greg would fit into the structure.
We're getting a window into Dan's
he's
mind.
He's not wearing
what's yeah. there.
He's not wearing a puffy jacket and jeans to get into that cube.
A smooth sort of
strip him down,
like an
grease him up.
I could take off the puffy jacket.
Yeah. And mask up, dude. That's the other thing. Giants at Chiefs is the other game, Monday Night Football. This is November now, November 1st. That's happening.
Oh, wait, before we get into it, I have a message for you guys.
Oh.
Whoa.
Okay.
Hello, heroes. Nick here again.
Uh-oh.
We took a big loss last week when the Titans demolished the Chiefs. How did it happen? Who knows, but it did. Tim is very upset we didn't let him lock up the Bengals over the Ravens last
week. Oh, that's a good call. Tim wanted the
Bengals. He is turning into a total elitist Bengals fan right now. In fact, he's sitting in his one-bedroom apartment high atop Price Hill on the west side of Cincinnati, sipping on a $300 of Sauvignon Blanc.
Ouch.
From the Bordeaux region of France.
Oh, he's
anyway,
bets
we
now,
told him
Nick.
He could pick this week since we didn't let him last week. So he is locking up the Cowboys over the Vikings.
Okay.
You may ask, why isn't Tim doing this recording? Well, Tim likes to sleep, sometimes 15 hours a day. How does he sleep 15 hours a day? Well, Tim doesn't have a job. That's okay. We love him anyway. See you soon, heroes. Good day.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
I would say, like, I understand that was, like, unmasked shots at Tim. But yeah. Tim has a lot figured out from what I'm listening
Apparently
to.
Not, according to Nick.
Wow.
15
I like
hours of sleep a day?
I think Nick heard my message that Tim really brought the heat.
Yeah.
And he came with it this week. He delivered.
Someone's paying for
I do
what
like
he's
that Tim is one of those guys who looks like he sleeps 15 hours a day.
Right. So he always looks well rested.
When the look matches up with the reality.
Wow, Nick, I hope you have something to fire back on your brother when you do get the opportunity and you wake up. By the way, those standings for the Locks, Zeus are on a 6-game winning streak, 6-1, Mark 5-2. The listeners and the Wessling brothers, 4-3, Greg, 3-4, Ricky, 2-4. 2-4 seems pretty good for Erica, actually. She's on a bit of a dynasty.
She had a bye week, too,
herself.
In there? At some
yeah, the
stage.
First week I wasn't allowed to play.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Right.
Greg was – that was not comfortable. mansplaining the rules of a picks game. All right, Giants at Chiefs, Monday night football. You know, usually this game would not pack any intrigue because, all right, Giants being led to slaughter at Arrowhead. But the Chiefs are so messed up right now. They're just so terrible that – they've become a curiosity. And I thought there was something very interesting that happened on Sunday's game. And I'm sorry if I shared this already, but I just want to say it again. When the Chiefs lined up for the 57-yard field goal down 27-3 late in the third quarter, it really just jumped out to me as like, whoa, where are we? How do we get here? And that's just the offense. And that's not even – it used to be we were worried about the turnovers, and we're still worried about the turnovers. But now we're worried about, like, is all this stuff about the two high safeties – have they flummoxed the Chiefs and Andy Reid to the point where they no longer can function as an elite offense? So the Giants, who – I'm kind of with you, Greg, are frisky, and they're not a good team. But, you know, on the right day – that you catch them and they're kind of fun to watch. They're still banged up. But it is going to be an interesting, again, test of where the Chiefs are.
Yeah, if Kadarius Toney was available for this game, or Barkley, or Galladay for that matter, I would
so,
I would
like, Barkley stepped on a guy's foot and now he's just going to be out for a month?
It sounds like they will practice Friday.
We don't. Yeah, like, okay, that helps. They missed Thursday's practice and it is a Monday night game. That would make me feel that the Giants at least can cover this 10.5 points. The Chiefs are 4-14 against the spread in their last 18. So that's just like a very clean way to say who's overrated, who's not. Like they're worse than people expect. And that started early last season. And the field goal moment is really well said, Dan. And it's kind of part of this larger part of that second half, which was those drives they were going on against Tennessee down 24, 27 points were like these 10-play drives, 18-play drives. So even when they were behind, they could not speed up.
That
was really surprising to me. I think Daniel Jones is playing well enough to keep them competitive in this game. And it's because the Chiefs haven't really found that other option other than Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Like Josh Gordon. Remember when they signed Josh Gordon? Josh Gordon has one catch.
Is anybody surprised about that?
I'm not shocked by that. I mean, I think that you're right, though. They're on a search for someone else other than that because Tennessee, with a depleted secondary to some degree, took care of business last week against both of those guys. They didn't show up in the first half. And you go back to like the playoff game where they were down to Houston. And to your point, Greg, you kind of would watch. I remember watching that with Wes, and we're like, the Chiefs are totally going to win this because you completely were entranced by their explosiveness on offense. And it's not the case right now. They've trailed by 14-plus three times this year. It happened like four times in the last like four seasons or something. And I don't think that you can ask the defense to heal itself. I think the offensive line got worked over by the Titans last week. And the Giants, for all their ups and downs and all their injured players, They took care of business against a bad offensive line in Carolina with 6 sacks a week ago. Leonard Williams is playing better. Daniel Jones, I think, is sort of a do-it-all guy right now, and it's been an optimistic couple of weeks for Daniel Jones. But this is also a team that gave up 82 points to the Rams and Cowboys. So it feels like a get-right spot for Kansas City. Everyone's falling for that for one more week. But then they have – it's just pushing off much bigger questions down the road.
I'm glad you brought up Daniel Jones, because as I watched the game – against the Panthers, the 25-3 win. They obviously didn't play great on offense, but Carolina is a good defense. And I thought Jones, as I was watching the game, he's such a difficult evaluation subject for the Giants, because we know where they are as an organization, and they really are trending toward, unless something changes here, a hard reboot. And that would probably mean you get rid of the quarterback too. But when you watch him on a week-to-week basis, I know the counting stats are just never there for him, and I wonder if that's on him, or if it's just been kind of a weird, funky career he's had. But I just I'm impressed by him.
He's
I
just
still
a great
am.
Athlete, and like it he's shows up in a lot of different ways.
I'm still impressed by him, the way he throws at times, the way he runs with the catch, of course, a diving catch. That's not going to be happening a lot, but it just shows you, like, he's in that kind of Josh Allen mold. Is this a guy that you want to get rid of? Would you live to regret it?
He's in his third year, so you don't have to worry about it. I don't think he's going anywhere. He's a good quarterback. He's an NFL starting quarterback. Now he might be average, which means he will get paid. But he's going into his fourth year next year. You're going to have him under control for 5. He's the least of their problems. And I think he's made a real step forward in year 3 and shown like what you can do when everything is collapsing around you. You can still show that you're a good player.
All right, let's move on to the draft. All right, the old Zeuser with the first overall pick. And I will start with a late game. And the game I will pick is the Buccaneers at the Saints. I love it. Saints, NFC South. This is kind of Greg's domain. You love this stuff, Greg. But I just want to see.
Great rivalry.
I like the rivalry. I want to see. This is the kind of game that I've been circling. Like, all right, let's see what you got, Jameis. Let's see what you're going to do in a big time division clash. We're now a little deeper into the season, and you're going to need to make some plays. I came out of Monday night not impressed at all. By the way he played in that game. I mentioned it on the Tuesday show. Eli, you know, mild-mannered, of course. Eli famously just killing Jameis for botching what should have been a touchdown on that last drive, and he just didn't have the awareness and didn't see the play unfold, which should have been an easy tight end screen pass for a TD. So
Eli is a great analyst. He really is.
He does a good – yeah, he really did break that down well. So here we go now with a chance against the Bucs defense. That is obviously tough, and I just want to see how good – if the Bucs are going to do – if they're just going to keep getting better and just crest and roll into the playoffs as a juggernaut. It's kind of how I see this. I see the Bucs as the even though I have the Cardinals ahead in the power rankings, I think the Bucs are the team that are going to come out of this conference with the number one seed. So this is a great challenge, and I love that it's at the Superdome, which evens the scales a little bit more.
I think few things show me how much both teams have changed. And the Bucs, to your power rankings point, are a Super Bowl team that's gotten better. And can you imagine either result from last year where the Saints put it on them 34-23, then 38-3? It just wouldn't happen to this.
That
Bucs
was Week 9. It was right about the same moment here, 38-3.
Yeah, it just wouldn't happen this time. And I think it's a great test for what the Saints are right now, because yes, they are not necessarily – they weren't a fun watch, obviously, on Monday night, but their defense is very spicy. And I think I just want to see how this shakes out. They've gotten healthier last week. They're getting healthier this week. And it's a great test for Tom Brady. For me, I mean, also, the Saints have brought Mark Ingram back into the mix. And they've said that it is absolutely possible that he will play this weekend. And I kind of like that reunion for their backfield, because post Latavius Murray, they need someone to help move Alvin Kamara around to different spots and spell him at times.
My dog. I mean,
well, good for him, though. He was on the Texans.
It's good vibes. You know? Right. It's good vibes bringing Mark Ingram back. I mean,
100%.
He's going to make them happier. I think that the Saints defense presents some problems for Tom Brady that other defenses don't. I know those two games feel like a long time ago, but even in the playoff game, they forced a couple of mistakes. I know they put up 30 points in that game, but he was held under 200 yards passing. If you remember it, they didn't do anything in the second half. It was really the Saints defense the Bucs defense who forced four turnovers who won that game. And the Saints have done a good job against Tom Brady, where I think there's a chance you could keep the Bucks under 30. I mean, that's all you can hope for is like to keep them to 27 or something. Now, can Jameis Winston and this Saints offense get to 30? I have my doubts, even though I think
with it, like Jameis a pick six or something.
Yeah, things
no,
the
I mean on offense.
Way.
I mean, you got to get it. Like, can you score 30 on offense? And I'm thinking about another Manning cast moment, which is one play last week where the Seahawks zero blitz and they just go, we're going to go man to man everywhere else. And the Mannings were going crazy because no one was open. Like, you got to have some receivers that can get open. And we talked about it in the offseason. Like, are they really going to go out there with like Marquez Callaway and Traquan Smith and Adam Troutman and these guys trying to win matchups? I mean, that has to be taken into account. This group has not exceeded expectations. It's been right where you thought they would be. And they just don't have many playmakers who can get open until Michael Thomas
gets
back.
What is the Michael Thomas status?
It sounds like a couple weeks away.
And Adam Troutman was the guy that I think appeared in probably 75,000 fantasy articles.
Well, what about Marquez Callaway?
Yeah,
of course.
My goodness.
Well, they're going to explode because there is no other tight end on the roster. They've rolled out
the red
carpet. It's like 11 catches.
Is Alvin Kamara and Jameis just isn't that great at the short routes. He's a weird quarterback that's better intermediate and deep. And he put some nice deep throws on the Seahawks, and they weren't complete. But the Bucks have the one guy who's kind of the AK stopper. They drafted Devin White to stop Alvin Kamara, and for the most part, he slowed him down since he was drafted.
All right, up next, Mark Sessler. You will select?
Well, I'm going to go where, you know, I have to go emotionally. It's going to be the Browns and the Steelers. Because it's a good game, and I don't trust someone else not to steal it if I allow this, you know, process to go on for another 40 minutes.
No, that's
minutes,
a good so. Game. That's one of the best games of the week. That's a big game.
That's fine.
It's you don't think it's a big game?
Oh, no, it is.
For these two fan bases?
It is. I'm just – is Case Keenum's a quarterback? Is where are we at on the
Baker
Browns?
Is practicing, and he's practicing as the starter, and he's demanded that he'll play.
Well, he demanded last week too.
That's true. I think that I think there's more steps, but you know, he isn't shelved. He is out there throwing. They said he looked good throwing short, intermediate. They didn't report on Mary
Kay Cabot.
Did not report on the deep passes.
It is funny thinking back. I kind of forgot that happened. That Baker was like, I decide whether I'm playing or not.
Well, that was
and then
not
like
the
a
case.
Day later, they were like, no, you're not starting.
That was not the case. I here's the thing, because this game, suddenly we're here,
it's
and
funny.
It's like an off season. I know it started with me ripping on the Steelers and having my fun, and then you start to, as the months creep up, it's like suddenly June and July. It's September. It's October.
You kind of have
November.
To win this game.
I was just going to say that you cannot take this Browns experience seriously if they don't go and back up what happened in that playoff game, because this is a Steelers team that's still vulnerable, yet they are very healthy right now. I think they had almost no one on their injury report of note at all this week. Tomlin seems super fired up. It wasn't just the USC question. Just in general, I think you got Tomlin coming off a bye. They're 4-0 in their last four times coming off a bye. They are 3-0 against the Browns coming off a bye. And I think it matters. They've had another week to look at where Cleveland's at, and especially that Denver game. You're not going to surprise them the way the Broncos got surprised. They haven't allowed 30 points all year long. T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, Dante
See, when
Johnson,
he's nervous, the monologue
Chase
gets
Claypool,
longer.
And here is the X factor that really, 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 yes, for Mark. Me, concerns me. Jim Nance, Tony Romo on the call. The Browns have had some of their most embarrassing, most frustrating performances with these guys, and you can just hear Tony Romo just sort of being like, I don't know, Jim, like Big Ben still got it, like just, you know, riffing on
Romo
Big Ben.
Is on Mark's radar so hard.
Oh, he is. Because
what's your theory, though, that when Jim Nance and Romo are on the call, something in the building changes?
It's too big. It's too big.
Right. It's Mark's it's feeling of like now the Browns are finally reached the top of the mountain in terms of like they're playing in big games and they can't get over that hump.
Here's the one concession.
If they lose this, they're in the cellar. They're in last place.
That's the thing. There's an argument for you being the worst team in a very good division. Still a decent team, but that Denver game, I thought, I want to say one thing.
It's
I thought that Denver game
Can we clock
was
this?
One of my favorite Browns performances under Stefanski. It wasn't flashy, but it kind of showed who they are, and they were in a dark place, and they
thumped
Denver. We
would have come back to you to say that. We would have come back to you.
Well, you guys can have your way with it now, but it's like this game does make me nervous. I shouldn't be watching it. It's like I'm Vinny Testaverde's father. I don't need this on a Sunday.
Your ticker cannot handle it. You know what Baker should do? He should go to the media and say, I demand that I do not play this week. I am not ready. And they'll be like, I'll show you, Baker. Put him in the lineup. Then he gets what he wants.
He can't win no matter what he
it's
says.
It's just kind of funny because I can't quite imagine any other quarterback saying that. So why is he
It's totally out of protocol
that?
Also. So like you right. don't, you know.
Yeah, this is a big game. And I don't know, man. I don't know, Mark. This is – there. It's – can't make sense of the Browns. All season, they've been a little bit of a tough team to read. So to get them now against the Steelers, and the Steelers obviously still peeved about what happened in January. They now get a chance to get some revenge going to Cleveland. If to me, it comes down to, can the Steelers build off the last couple of weeks? Najee Harris, you know, he is, if he gets a little more help, a little better blocking, if the offense can do a little bit more through the air, I think he becomes an offensive rookie of the year guy because he's their number one receiver. He's their primary ball carrier. He's on the field and he's been a good blocker. He's doing everything they want him to do. They just need Ben and the passing game to get a little bit together and the blocking up front. That's so important that they kind of continue to build on some positive aspects of the last 2 weeks.
Harris has been solid, but he's not winning anything with Jamar Chase, Kyle Pitts, and Mac Jones in the league.
Oh, that's true.
It's just not going to happen. But they need him in their running game to be good because their offense has such a limited ceiling. Throwing the ball, like that game on Sunday night against the Seahawks was typical to me. That was one of the better games they had throwing the ball and as an offense. But then they needed overtime against a Seahawks defense that had been struggling to get to 350 yards and 23 points or whatever it was. It's just – it's limited, and I don't feel like I'm struggling with the Browns. They've just been injured. I want to know that Jarvis Landry's playing. It sounds like he is.
He says he is, but we don't know. You know that
Jadeveon Clowney, who's been great for them, like has been even better, I think, than they could have hoped for so far. He's a little banged up. Denzel Ward really changes their secondary when he's not in there, and he sounds quite iffy. But to me, they're just a better team than the Steelers. They've got the assistant coach of the year, Bill Callahan. Let's start that movement. Doesn't matter who's on the offensive line. You can run the ball when you've got a Callahan on your roster, on your coaching staff. he really is like the most.
It's not Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and the rookie who's a real player. It's Bill Callahan. Okay, let's give him the trophy. Give him the trophy.
Show me that Bill Callahan did not dramatically improve their running game. They would not be the same without him. I really believe that. And so I think as long as the Browns are relatively healthy, and even if Keenum played, I really like them in this game. I just think they're a better team. I think they're a good team.
Got to do it, though. It's I'm with you. Got to do it.
Going to be some big Sessler energy going on in the early games. Looking forward to it. Let's take a break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar!
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's move on. Greg, you're up, buddy.
All right. This is easy. I'm taking the Pats and the Chargers right across the street over at SoFi.
I want you to know that I still have 2 jumps on you, and I very, very nearly jumped you, but I said I don't want to be a mean guy. So I let you have this.
Wait,
game.
You can jump me after you've already used your pick. Okay.
I could jump you at any time, and I've done it once, and I have two more.
I thought
based
since
on
you
that,
were first, you could.
That Herschel Walker level trade I pulled
total
off.
Total. It also wouldn't make sense. Yeah, you took the Bucs Saints, and the Patriots Chargers
But then I could have given it to Mark or something, or Shook. I mean, I could just wheel and deal for destruction, but I chose not to. Go ahead.
Sure. Save your jumps. That it helps the show. It adds a little more tension. And let me watch this. I haven't watched any Pats live almost this year. I haven't wanted to. They haven't been that interesting, but I'm interested now. They got my attention. Mac Jones is playing better each and every week. They're going up against Herbert, who they held to no points a year ago. His worst game as a pro came against the Patriots. Don't think that's going to carry over very well because they don't have the same defensive backs. Stephon Gilmore's playing for the Panthers. They lost Jonathan Jones for the season, one of the most underrated cornerbacks, one of the better slot cornerbacks in the league. So now you're down two corners. I'm including that you're down Gilmore because when you're starting Jalen Mills and you're starting this guy Miles Bryant who just came off the practice squad, like you're down. They are not the same secondary. So I think you're going to have to stay aggressive offensively. You're going to have to score points to beat this Chargers team. And I think they could potentially do it. I think they are rounding into shape on offense, and Damian Harris and this inside running game is great. They've stopped it with the outside runs. They've stopped trying to get too fancy. They've settled on an offensive line group now with Onwenu at right tackle, and the interior is stabilized and Wynn at left tackle that I think they like. They're going to start the same group for the second straight week for the first time maybe all season, and I think they could give the Chargers a lot of problems, and I think it'll be a fun game. I love the Patriots to cover 5.5. I don't know if they win this, but I really think they're going to be competitive in this.
I thought few things were more impressive, and I know it was the Jets, so you can put it on that scale, but Harris just slashing the middle of New York's defense over and over.
Good
and,
ball player.
And this is a good – I mean, the Chargers' run defense is one of their biggest issues, so you like that setup. I think Mac Jones, you know, throwing for 300-plus. It looked like the offense just took a tangible step forward with the chances they were willing to take, with some trickery as well. They kind of just went for it and flexed their muscles, and they put it on Justin Herbert a year ago. It's a different season. And the Chargers, you know, the one thing I love about Brandon Staley on a bye week – is that he went deep into the lab. He's all about analytics, and you know they've been a very good team on third down, the sixth highest conversion rate on third down with Justin Herbert. But he basically said, we've got to get much better on earlier downs.
That worries me.
I think he's coming up with some new plans. But their offensive line also, which we were worried about, has been one of the better pass-protecting lines in the league, which is a huge change from a year ago.
We'll get to it a little bit later when we get to the 49ers, but like going into your bye week analytics deep dive, it usually only works if you have a really good quarterback to execute everything. They do, and I think Justin Herbert is going to have a big game here.
I don't trust the Patriots defense. I actually trust their offense more. I think they are a better offensive team
all right
now.
Greg,
than
let me talk. Let me talk.
That's all. I'm saying.
I'm just saying that I think the Patriots, and you've been banging the drum on this, Greg, that you look at the Patriots' wins. They beat the Jets twice. They beat Houston barely. In Houston, and I think you know the Dallas game showed they could hang with a good team. But am I sold that the Patriots aren't one of those teams? Like they're going to beat all the bad teams, they're going to win about half of the matchups against the good teams, and then get beat by anybody that is very good or above.
Basically, the 2020 Patriots. The difference
maybe a little better.
If you're a Patriots fan, the difference is Mac Jones
right.
over Cam.
So the whole thing when I look at the Patriots right now is. Is Mac Jones going to continue to ascend and then by the end of the year be seen as like the breakout quarterback? I think it's in play. I really do like him, but I like the Chargers this week a lot. In fact, I like them so much.
Ooh.
And it matters because there's something magic. There's something magical going on with it. I got some sprinkle dust here. Ricky, this is not personal, even though you're wearing the oversized Edelman jersey. I'm going to lock up the Chargers. Let's go, Bolts.
That's sad.
Show me, hey, Bolts, by the way, little thing. Everyone wants to crown the Bolts as a superpower. Okay, come off your bye in your building and spank the Patriots. They're, go do it. And I'm healthier, counting on them to do it.
They're healthier defensively. Some guys like at the linebacker spot and Justin Jones at defensive tackle that aren't big names but are starters that they were missing against Baltimore. I think they have three starters returning after.
Are you worried about the sprinkle?
A little bit. Yeah. You're using the your dark magic to make your Sunday more enjoyable by burying the team you dislike the most and burying me in the process.
Are you not going to walk over?
I'm a little worried.
Take a look at that. This game in person. You could cross. It's like a 200-yard strip of pavement.
I know.
It
would
for
be.
You,
I mean,
you nailed all that analysis, by the way. Though. Just want to say.
Yeah, I should be able to do that. Damn it!
Just say I'm Greg Rosenthal, and then the doors, double doors, just open.
I entered the raffle, by the way.
I've done that like 12 times.
Yeah,
at this
if
point.
I were to win the raffle, I would consider giving you the tickets.
Okay.
But I haven't heard yet. I'll let you know. All right, let's move on. I said consider, Greg. It's snakes to you, buddy.
It's a very active snake this time.
I know. I'm waiting for the end of this.
Still, I know. I think you're primed to get jumped here, Sessler.
Titans Colts is my pick. Big game. Big AFC South game. Nice early game.
That is a good game. That's a good pick.
It's the chance for the Colts to get back to relevance. Now, if they end up 3-5, if you look at their schedule the rest of the way, I still think they will get back into the wild card mix. This doesn't end their season, but this really raises the ceiling. It gives you a chance to win the division. It gives you a chance to, you know, really look at themselves and be proud that they overcame the start that they did. They've outscored their opponents since they last played the Titans in their three wins by 50 points. They've got a runner in Jonathan Taylor who, I'm not going to say he's better than Derrick Henry, but I'd take him in this game over Derrick Henry. Because
fading the big dog again, always a mistake.
I am. The Colts, according to EPA, and DVOA, number one run defense in the league. Titans, I have to believe it. And Taylor does the things as a running back that get me excited, which is that hesitation, that vision, and just that explosion. I mean, he is fun to watch. Wes was on this early. I think he called him like a top 5-10 runner in the NFL quite early last season. I didn't realize it then, but he was ahead of it. And I think it's a Titans team that they've historically had success with. Vrabel's never been able to sweep Frank Reich. They got hired the same year, 2018. And I think Titans coming off two big wins. It's a coin flip game, but I think the Colts could pull this thing off.
The thing for me about Tennessee is that last week I loved that they came out biggest game of the year, 15 runs, 15 passes. They were totally balanced. It wasn't all about Derrick Henry. You know, this is a weird one where they close out their two-game series in Week 8, which is early for division foes. They held Jonathan Taylor to 64 rushing yards that first time. That's, you know, that's game script. The Titans never trailed in that game.
That was the Carson Wentz is playing on two broken ankles, and like it was comical that
right.
He even was trying to play in that game.
No, it helps that it's different. But I look at the Titans, and I kind of feel like a huge X factor for me was if Todd Downing could come in and duplicate what Arthur Smith did as a play caller on offense. And it just did not look that way early on, except since that awful week one, they're averaging like 30 points a game. They're the team that's grown. I mean, if you're the Colts, you're thinking...
They both have.
They have, but I look at the Colts and
Titans
I'm like...
Titans more so, yes.
The Colts to me are like... I appreciate the Colts. They're kind of a meat and potatoes team. Their defense needs to thrive.
They're your team long term now, right?
No, they are absolutely not, because I see zero exciting X factors that tell me that they're more powerful than
good.
The Titans. And I am comfortably locking up the Titans in this game.
Oh!
Comfortably.
Interesting.
Look, Gravedigger. So you lock against the Titans one week, you lock in favor of them the next.
It's called learning.
I get whacked. I'm sure that Graver does not feel as confident. I'm not going to put words in his mouth. I'm going to ask him, Graver. Just because the Colts have been a tough test for Mike Vrabel to solve. Right? So you got to worry. It's a division game.
Don't let him be a leading questioner. You come in with your own opinions based off of who you are.
I got some stats if you guys want them.
Give us some nugs.
So this is according to the New York Times playoff simulator thing. Titans current odds to win the division, 81%. If they win on Sunday, it jumps to 97%.
Yep. It's a wrap. They win
That's
the division
what I was
if they
say.
Win Sunday.
Right. That's a terrible division. Two of the teams don't exist in that division.
It's a wrap because, it doesn't really matter if you have swept that head-to-head on top of having a huge lead at this point. It's pretty much over.
Darius Leonard called it a must-win game, so you're already in the heads of these players.
Well, here's the thing, though. I'm picking the Colts in this game outright. I think they are they're a desperate team. They're playing better.
Mark's face was ashen. Let's when lock he said off. That.
Let's do a lock off. Then.
Well, I don't feel that confident because I'm respecting the Titans and what they've done the last 2 weeks, obviously. But the Titans are not a flawless team. The Titans can be beat. They're on the road. They could lose and still be okay. Whereas the Colts, they know full well. Frank Reich's a good ass coach. Frank Reich's drilling into their heads all week. Hey boys, we lose this, we done. We need to protect this house. And I think with Taylor and Wentz playing at a higher level, if the Titans come out of this, put it this way, Gravedigger, if the Titans come out of this game and spank the Colts in this setting, I look at the Titans at a level that I didn't even take out of them after beating the two big-time contenders.
Top 14.
I see them as maybe not top four, maybe in the AFC.
What else do they need to do?
They're, to me, become like a top 5 to 7 NFL team. That's how much I put into this game and how much is against the Colts right now.
And Greg said it is a huge letdown spot after those two wins that they're coming off of. And it's also a lot different type of matchup because the Titans haven't really had to deal with stopping running games over the last 2 weeks. It's been the Bills and the Chiefs passing all over the field. So I don't know if the Titans can
Braden Smith, the right tackle for the Colts, sounds like he'll be back. T.Y. Hilton did return for a limited practice on Thursday. Quentin Nelson was back last week. So Wentz is playing well. I think the Titans are a better team, but I think it's hard to sweep a division opponent, and this will be a tough
one. I feel like everyone sees more in the Colts than I do, but they put me to sleep a couple
weeks.
They
are your favorite team now, though. You spun the wheel.
That segment, you're the one that said that segment had some issues.
It was your choice to spin the wheel.
I know, you have to do it. I understand, but I learned a lesson.
And now I'll say something positive about the Titans because I know Titans fans are always in their feelings about things, and I respect your passion, guys, but calm down sometimes. Mike Vrabel, good coach. Let's just say it. I know we're always asking questions, it feels like, entering seasons. Is Mike Vrabel really a good coach? Well, the results are there, and now the offensive architect leaves and they're still a good team. They got a good guy there.
Never had a losing record. He's Tomlin like. I mean, he's only in year four.
So would not
never had a losing record.
In summation, I think it's a good lock, Mark. Good luck to you on it. It wouldn't stun me if they won, but the Colts, I feel like they're going to come.
It could be a week where I actually plan to lock a whole different thing, but for the showmanship aspect,
that's who you are.
I mean, switch it on Twitter.
That when you locked it up, I was thinking Michael Jackson in his prime.
I know you were.
It was like,
I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable with my grasp over that, but you're right.
It was like when the Moonwalk was debuted at the Soul Train Awards in 82. All right, let's go, Mark. You're up, buddy. Your second pick will be?
I'm doing this for a friend.
Oh.
I'm trying to unburden a friend of something that's been a burden, a green-colored burden.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to take the Bengals at the Jets because while Cleveland is battling Pittsburgh, I want to monitor. Suddenly, I must monitor the Bengals for the first time in half a decade because they matter. They are the number one team in the AFC North. It's no fluke. What they did to the Ravens, and it took me a while to get to that game, was incredibly impressive. The Jets are sitting ducks right now. I honestly, for all you want to say about the Jets offense.
Is this in the lock zone, by the way? No, it's not, right?
No.
Gosh, I don't think so. Yeah. I think the Bengals might be like 10-point favorites or so. Yeah, more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have a chance to say, we don't care. We're not going to let the Jets anywhere close to that. They just are able to do everything on offense that it pleases the eye. Joe Burrow has 9 touchdown passes of 30-plus yards. Watching Ja'Marr Chase catch that one long touchdown that began with, here's the catch, I'm spinning around, I've got 3 Ravens within arm's length of me, see you all later, I'm out. Like, there hasn't been a Bengals player like that in a long, long time. I think this is a great setup for Joe Mixon after watching New York's reported run defense just get destroyed.
They don't have any linebackers right now. It was a little bit of a fluky game when Brandon Bolden is lighting up your fifth string linebacker.
Speaking of Brandon Bolden, I feel like he's been playing for like 14 years at this point and still making plays for New England. But if you're the Bengals and you don't go, you talk about a letdown game, you've got to go absolutely drop a metallic hammer on the Jets.
Spicerack's worried about this game. He thinks that's what's going to happen.
That's where Bengals fans can be now, though.
That seems crazy.
Right?
Can we talk about the Flacco trade?
Yes.
For a second?
I'm not doing that. I am not doing that.
So Flacco gets dealt to the Jets. Tough sitch.
I'm done.
For him. And I just kind of assumed, okay, he's going to start this week. Then there are these reports that, no, actually, Flacco's not going to practice till Friday.
Such a bad look.
Mike White is going to start this week. And I just started thinking, like, Did Flacco have to be convinced to show up? Like, did he consider retiring? Because I think that's what he asked for. He asked for a couple more days to make the move. It's a short move. He's an older guy. He was with this. Like, he might not want to play. And because didn't they trade him to play? And he's not playing this week. Mike White had a couple moments actually last week where he didn't look terrible. But this is a tough situation.
But it is a new offense. It's not. He's not going into last year's offense. That
but
would
they
be...
said like it was like Garrett. You know, he's had experience in a similar type.
I just
of
don't
offense.
Understand. Which yeah. And he knows the building
weird,
and he knows
weird,
the team.
But this was weird.
It's a weird move, but it was always weird. The Jets played that poorly, of course, as they always do, by having no experience on the roster behind Zach Wilson. So the fact that as soon as Zach Wilson gets hurt and you go and scramble and trade for the guy you had last year. It's just a bad look. It shows that you weren't prepared. It didn't have the foresight that even all the beat writers and, you know, jabronis like us had. So it is what it is. He will play probably. And the Zach Wilson, I don't know if we even talked about it on the show. He's out, it looks like, 2 to 4 weeks with this PCL.
He wasn't terrible injury. Before he got injured. He had a couple nice throws. Griffin.
They're playing on Thursday night next week, the Jets, unfortunately. So that means Wilson's definitely out for that game.
Yeah.
So it's either White or Flacco.
Is that a Dan and Mark game?
This has a 30-6 final written all over it. We shall see. I do have one idea, though. The Jets, two things that they don't have yet, an interception or a point in the first quarter. And I have an idea. Here, play this. This is from, and apologies to Catalan and Lofton. I kind of got after him on Sunday. You know, bad job not mentioning the whole Belichick running up the score, but, you know, you just were in the eye of a tornado. So sorry, guys, for getting after you on Sunday night if you're listening. But play Lofton and Catalan in conversation late in the first quarter on Sunday.
Robert Saleh told us he made a couple of subtle changes to try to jumpstart the offense. One of them, every day at Jets practice, there's a four-play competitive period, the first-team offense against the first-team defense. If they tie, each winning two, they do a basketball shootout to determine the winner. But in any event, that's usually done at about 1:45 in the afternoon. This week it was done closer to 1 o'clock, which is closer to the start of a game. They were hoping that little things like that would help to get them going in the opening quarter of games.
So here's my idea. We move that up to noon. So you do the basketball shootout at noon, and then by the time that happens, their internal clock will be 1 hour later for kickoff, which is usually when they start playing better. Noon, not one, for the competitive basketball shootout.
Yeah, talk about eyes on the prize. This is what's happening behind closed doors in Florham Park.
All right. Okay, Mark, so you got the Jets there. That's okay, and Mark was a class act. He approached me about it before we came on, and I am on a break from the Jets, so that is fine. Okay, I am up now on, and it's really pretty rough right now. There's not a lot of good games left to pick. I will check in on the Panthers and Falcons here. We know where Carolina is. They are in the tank. A report came out early in the week that the Panthers were in the mix for Deshaun Watson.
Like an hour after the game.
Right. They were now, I think the wording in the ESPN report is they were evaluating their search for a franchise quarterback after they had benched Sam Darnold in the loss to the Giants. And then another report, I think maybe it was Rap Sheet, connected them directly to Watson. But then a report came out yesterday, Wednesday, that the Panthers were not in on Deshaun Watson. So we'll see what's going on there. But I think it kind of makes sense because Deshaun Watson, forget about all the, you know, ugliness around the situation. He's not going to save their season anyway. It's not like whoever gets Deshaun Watson, if he is moved before Monday or whatever it is going to slide into the starting lineup.
He's going to make everyone there miserable from the coach to the starting quarterback is what would happen, which is why I still don't think it'll happen.
And maybe he does go to the Panthers, but maybe David Tepper, as much as he wants Deshaun Watson potentially, is like, well, I'm not going to do it in the middle of the season. It doesn't even make sense. Now, you have to play the games. And you know that Sam Darnold, because of their backup quarterback situation, is going to continue to be the starter for the time being. So that's where they are. And they get a Falcons team in Atlanta that has been frisky on offense. Look, I'll give him that, and I think they're going to score points in this game. But I also think even against the Dolphins, the win over the Dolphins, where they got the field goal at the end, Greg, that this is a team that all season, for the so far to this point, and I think for the rest of the year, they'll score some points, they can get ahead, but the defense is always begging to give away games, and I could see that happening even here if Carolina could score.
Right, even against the Jets, there was no reason for
that
game.
They were begging to give that game away.
Exactly. But they keep playing these really weak offenses for the most part that they can get away with it. And this is another week. They could have a winning record after this week. This is certainly a winnable game for Atlanta. I just don't know what happened to Carolina on offense other than Sam Darnold. I guess if we want to put everything on him, it seems crazy because they're 29th right now in EPA. Like, they are one of the worst offenses in the league. It's not just that they're struggling. They're almost unplayable. This should be a matchup where Sam Darnold doesn't look terrible. But on the other side, you got some guys who are just looking amazing. I mean, Kyle Pitts is that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the first couple of weeks, we were like, oh, yeah, Kyle Pitts. Where's the guy that's going to change the face of the world? Well, here he is.
That's him.
He's here.
He's here now.
He was making every type of catch in that. That was as good a game from a rookie tight end that's probably ever – you know, that's been played because he couldn't do anything more than he did. Every type of play that you would want someone to make, like, he made it. Yep. If you were asking me who would you take for the rest of your career, Kyle Pitts or Ja'Marr Chase, it's still a question. The guys who went 4 or 5. I don't think that's a slam dunk. That's how good he is.
To your point, if you watch that game, the end of that game, so there's two big completions from Ryan to Pitts that get him in field goal range, and then Koo hits a kick. Falcons beat Dolphins. On the play that really put them in field goal range, a 28-yarder, Pitts lines up on the outside against Xavien Howard, an all-pro ball hawk who regularly shuts dudes down, and he beat him by a step and then just won with his size and athleticism and then just won the ball and won the game. Like, he's doing stuff that Darren Waller, when Darren Waller is locked in, can do that. But that's it to me when you talk about tight ends.
Well, it's like he's a powerful enough type of presence where no matter what happens to the Falcons this season, you look back and say, Kyle Pitts is something you build around for forever here. And there are other questions there, but I mean, their rebuild right now, and I never would have thought this a couple weeks ago, looks a little more promising than Carolina's. It's not just Sam Darnold, though, because their offensive line has been bad, and they have the most wide receiver drops since week 4. I mean, that group of wide receivers has killed Darnold.
They get Shaq Thompson back this week, and they get Stephon Gilmore this week, which I'm very intrigued. I kind of wish I took this game.
That is on your radar.
I'm into the Falcons, and I want to see Gilmore and how he looks. By all accounts in New England, he could have played week 1, and that he absolutely was sitting out, and they knew that, and that's partly why they traded him, because they just like can't deal with this. I want to see him matching up against Kyle Pitts. That would be the matchup. Kyle Pitts, you can call him a tight end. He is a wide receiver. He's just a receiver, and he could be one of the best wide receivers in the league. It's not just tight end. Gilmore, Pitts.
Why is Gilmore not on a improving Patriots team right now? What an ad that would have been.
Sometimes it's just like, we're going separate ways.
How about just make him play? How about just make him play or give him like a couple $1 million because he's going to make your team better?
Money does not solve everything, Greg. I know that's counter to your thinking.
I think in this case, it was 100% about money, that there was a lot of respect.
I'm just saying for everyone ever, it does not solve everything.
For Stephon Gilmore,
it did not solve enough
in this situation.
Remember Melvin Ingram last summer? Remember that was another guy who had been with the team for a while as a star, and he was unhappy with his contract, and the Chargers said, hey, you know, we respect you. You've done a lot for our organization. Let's play ball. We're going to give you some guaranteed money we don't have to give you. We're going to move some things around. How about we get on the field and we do this together? And he did. But that's not how the Patriots and Bill Belichick operate.
Speaking of which, Melvin Ingram wants out of Pittsburgh.
Right, he's very disgruntled.
May
now,
never play for the Steelers again. That's just a random aside.
Which we
aside.
Were saying, like, you know, oh, this is just a total Steelers
Hosannas.
Move. It's just going to mind meld.
He had a couple great weeks, and I don't know what's happened since.
All right, I have to take one more game. Oh, boy. These are not great.
I like that Panthers Falcon. Let me trade.
You want to do a trade?
We'll see.
All right. Let's toss the break, and I got you one. When we come back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
And I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
It's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Might as well check in on the other bad. No, I don't want to do that. Niners at Bears, we'll grab that.
Draft room in chaos.
This is pretty rough. This is some rough pickings right now. 49ers at Bears. I want to see the last Jimmy Garoppolo start in the history of the 49ers. So this gives me a chance to do that. I would imagine Trey Lance, if he can get healthy, is at some point going to get in there. And I think it was Peter King did a interview that I read an article that was based off the interview. And I like King.
Okay.
I like King. I think he has good insight of things. He gave Keisha
a shout out in Monday Morning Quarterback in her piece, which
yes.
is awesome.
I mean, when Peter King is gone, he's one of those guys that has been around for so long that you can kind of take him for granted. But then when he's gone, we'll miss Peter King. That's my take. All that said, I don't know why I'm talking about Peter King so much right
You're
now.
You're upset about being underrated. I hope he doesn't hear this.
He's like, what am I?
I'm saying he's a legend. You're gonna miss him when he's gone. Peter King said that.
Why would he be gone, though?
Well, because he's not going to be around forever. He's been doing this for like 30
life
or 40
final.
Years.
Yes.
Not life is fragile, although certainly it is. It's just I think he's in a man. He's a man in his 60s now.
It's true. We traveled very far down.
He's banked
this,
enough money if he wants to just start traveling around and tasting those
back
coffees
to the money.
Everywhere. He can do it.
The coffee nerdness.
It gets you that, Mark, if nothing else.
I can't be 110% materialistic all the time. There are other things happening.
Peter King said in this interview that I read an article based on the interview that he was all about where Kyle Shanahan was coming down on this Trey Lance situation. Don't play him. It's not worth trying to save this season if it's going to mess up the kid's development, I guess. I guess I buy in on all that. It makes sense. But at a certain point, you're going to have to turn to the kid if Garoppolo doesn't show improvement. I thought he was so bad on Sunday night, and yes, blah, 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 the weather and all that. But at a certain point, you can't ignore it anymore that he's a detriment to your offense. And I think when I was thinking about like kind of more broadly about Shanahan, because he's catching a lot of heat now, and I think maybe a little too much heat, because I think what people don't typically realize is that with these quote-unquote quarterback whisperers or these offensive geniuses that everyone falls in love with, it only works if the quarterback's good. Look at Sean McVay as a perfect example. When Goff came into the league and was playing at a high level, he was a genius. Then the last couple of years, all of a sudden, is McVay still a genius? Now he went and got a better quarterback. He's a genius again. Like, I think Kyle Shanahan will resume being a genius as soon as he can get a quarterback that can run an offense effectively.
Sure.
And until that happens, he's trapped in a twilight zone, and the team will continue to lose more than the win and continue to be disappointing, and he will continue to be a subject of talk. Is he overrated? No, he's not overrated. All offensive geniuses are overrated because it really goes back to the quarterback.
Yeah, I think like the whole QB whisper thing is typically the result of lack of information. We don't understand like how they communicate, what they're doing. But there's no question that Shanahan, before this season, would have been looked at someone who had to deal with a lot of backup quarterbacks, mid-level type quarterbacks, and would maximize them. That's not been the case this year at all. And I thought that his comments after week 7 were, and you know, a couple writers mentioned this too, that he seemed humbled. It was a different version of Shanahan where he wasn't the genius in terms of the product we're seeing week to week. And they asked him about Lance, and he said, I don't think it's fair to him And I don't think it's right for our team to put him in the lineup right now. And I think it tells me that the environment in San Francisco is not what it's been in the past in terms of, like, the dominant ground game. The offensive line has not been totally supreme. You got guys like Brandon Ayuk, who are one of the more mysterious, notable, strange, not being used players in the league right now. And I guess you could also look at Justin Fields and say, yeah, if you put a young quarterback into a bad situation, they are going to struggle. He struggled mightily a week ago, and the four worst quarterback rankings or passer ratings in the league right now are all rookies.
Wow. They're not that talented. There's this idea that the 49ers are really talented, but when you take Trent Williams, who missed that game Sunday night, and it sounds like he might miss another, and you take George Kittle out, and he will be on IR at least for one more week, they're not that talented.
Right.
It's like they're trying to convince themselves into Trent Sherfield in the preseason. Where did that go? They're not that talented at running back either. I'm surprised to see a Shanahan quarterback, even Jimmy G, struggle this much, though, because this is the worst version of Jimmy G. It got me thinking how not all good trades and not all good values are good for you, because Shanahan's entire tenure in San Francisco has been shaped by taking Jimmy Garoppolo for a mid-second round pick because the value was good. I don't think they really wanted Jimmy Garoppolo. I know that in a way because they didn't call about Jimmy Garoppolo. They called the Patriots about Tom Brady. Is Tom Brady available? No. You can have Jimmy G for a late second. They didn't have a quarterback. They're just like, well, this isn't really like a permanent thing, but it's like, why don't we just take him?
But then they
and here
they,
we are, though, 4 or 5 years later, and because of a lot of things that happened, it's like they still have him, and I never have felt that he's been a perfect fit. I've never felt that Kyle Shanahan's felt that he's a perfect fit, and it's taken him a long way to, like, get out of it, because the 1 year where they were healthy and they had him, they go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they were mesmerized by him because he had those six games post-trade where we all thought, wait a minute, they have...
He was better than what they had, so then why not take him?
They paid him a ton of money, so it tells you something.
And I also think, because someone could come back on what I said to kick off this conversation, say, well, they did thrive with Jimmy G once. This is not the same Jimmy G anymore. I think the injuries have really taken a toll on Garoppolo all over his body, and I just think he's a marginalized player of what he used to be. And I think you just got to, at a certain point, make a move, because you're right. And Justin Fields on the other side, just to touch on the Bears real quick, they're in the same situation where it seems like it's one step forward, two steps back with a rookie quarterback. But I just feel like we have reached the point where Trey Lance is the in case of emergency break glass situation, not for Kyle Shanahan's job security, but for this season and in a lot of ways his reputation right now is like, how do I get back to where I was? I need some fresh blood in here, and maybe it works out. But it is a risk. It's a gamble if you don't think he's ready.
This NFC wildcard race is quite open at the back end. So both of these teams are certainly not giving up on being part of that race. This is a big game for them. San Francisco's a heavy favorite on the road. I'm kind of past the point of San Francisco being a heavy favorite against anyone. I mean, the Bears, they did beat the Raiders. They were competitive there with the Bengals. Like, they've won. They were the only team that won easily against
three
the Lions.
No Khalil Mack.
I'm just not penciling in San Francisco turning this around.
I don't think anyone would be, though, after watching them. But there's no Khalil Mack, and it's possible that Chris Tabor is the head coach, their special teams coordinator, if Nagy doesn't get through the
interesting
COVID stuff.
All right, we have two more picks. Mark, what's your third game?
Well, let me look here. This is the offerings are becoming less pleasant by the minute. But I'm going to go because I have to do for like the eighth week in a row, I have to watch Teddy Bridgewater, which it's fine. But I'm going to go Washington at Denver.
He just called it Teddy Bridgewater.
That's a great name.
What? I did not intend to.
Teddy no, but you, that is what that you is. Said.
Well, I didn't. That's not.
That's a great Halloween costume, by the way. You Teddy's costume and then just like a busty Teddy Bridgewater.
I did not call it that, though, just for when it gets put out in print.
You
and it's
you
like,
should wear that
you
on
did.
Sunday.
It's way more individual.
You should wear that on
anybody,
Sunday.
I got for the first time in a long time, we live in this nice little town in L.A., and there's like
Humble an brag.
Adult a Halloween party that my wife got invited to. And
ooh,
it's the whole
when?
Thing. Saturday night.
Okay.
And, you know, I have to come up with a costume, and it's a whole thing. I don't know when's the last time you guys have done that or have done it in a long... It, for me, it's been...
I don't think as an adult I've dressed up in a Halloween costume. And I would go and I'd dress as like the Hardy Boys in like a flannel shirt.
Oh, like Brooks Brothers?
Oh, Eric is killing me because I didn't show up to our office dressed in a Halloween costume. But like, you're like the only person. It was like three people that I've seen walking around in costumes. And it's mostly your delightful crowd back there. But I'm not going to show up in like a ghost outfit or something.
Why are you so mad?
What? Because when I walked into the studio today, the first thing she said was like, yuck. Looking at me, and I was like, that's an HR offense.
I think you look sharp, by the way.
I know, but you don't tell. Yeah. I understand that I'm a guy, so you can say whatever you want to me, but you don't tell another human being yuck at their
But we told
appearance.
You it wasn't about you. We
that's were what you said after the effect.
But so, you walked that's, in.
That's
and
not
we were
my. That wasn't my experience.
It's not like we turned and looked at you and we're like, yuck.
It wasn't a we thing. It was you. I don't know who we is.
No, like, I said, no what did you dress up as? Brooks Brothers. Because that's what you look like. You just went to the outlets.
Erica is refashioning the what happened there.
Anyway, I am I'm checking Amazon right now because I'm going to be Vincent Vega when he had to get rid of his clothes and put on the UC Santa Cruz Banana Slug T-shirt.
Oh, that's pretty easy.
With the
that's
blue
good.
Shorts.
That's good.
But
well, wait. Will she be Samuel Jackson? Or
I don't think that would be smart. So she's going to stay away from the Samuel Jackson, Marcel, what was Jackson's character in that? It was Vincent Vega and, what was it?
I don't know why I'm not.
Anyway, the Santa Cruz Banana Slug T-shirt is scheduled to arrive Saturday at 7 PM. So that's right on the nose. So, you know, let's hope that works out.
That's the Jets with their little basketball tournament right there.
Yes.
Mark's trying to get. You know, your poor wife, like, put on social media. Like,
I'm just saying they were paired together in the film, but that I understand.
All right. Let's, where were we?
Washington at Denver. I'm picking this.
Greg never was in a Halloween costume once in his whole life. That's my prediction. You were born at age 32, so you missed the childhood.
I was in Halloween costumes up until the same age as everyone as a child, and I did go to multiple adult.
What age was that, Greg?
Whatever, 13 or 14.
Well, what's
whatever.
One thing you dressed Whenever up it's as?
A, there's that one year where like the people giving you the candy start looking you side-eye, being like, come on.
Yes.
You don't fit.
You're a little
yep.
too old.
What's one thing that you dressed up as a youth?
I was going to say I did Abraham Lincoln in New York. I grew the beard for it. You know, it
Weren't
was,
you an adult
wait,
in New York?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
I went
you did.
To,
okay,
I went to some in my 20s in New York. I think I grew a beard for the Red Sox 2004 playoff run, and then I
Checks
shaved
out.
It down to the Abraham Lincoln, and that was an outfit. So I did.
Lincoln was the tallest president,
right? So you know, it's kind of funny when a little short.
How tall would that make him?
I think he was 6'5", which in 1860s or whatever was a giant, straight up. Jules Winfield was the name of Samuel Jackson's character.
I don't think people have changed that much. There were 6 foot
Broncos and
then,
football team fans are like,
Wait
please talk about it.
Have you ever been to Wrigley Field, Fenway Park? The size of those seats, I guess Americans have gotten broader.
I think they've gotten broader.
But I think they've gotten
taller.
Let's eat processed food from age 4 on. Yeah, you're going to be
The entire human population has gotten taller.
It wasn't like he was this at 6'4", 6'5". No one had seen that before.
I didn't say
no,
that.
No, but it was
I didn't say
you
that.
Have
That's
to adjust
unfair.
For height inflation. Dan's right. It was different being that tall.
He was 6'4".
I could have been I don't like to show when Greg starts agreeing with Dan on something that I said just as an
offhanded. To your point.
I'm all about the truth.
Let's say, all right, Abe Lincoln was 6'4". George Washington was 6'2". So that's a nice size as well.
That's also from ancient times.
And then let's just say,
tall people.
Trump was 6'3". I mean, so, yeah, all right.
Oh, people, men in their 6 foot region have been around for hundreds of years.
I got
years.
Your 6 foot
they also,
region.
We got they a breaking also, news strip. You know, get advantages. Like, you can basically choose who's going to be like the CEO or whatever just based on height and like
Help.
Facial structure.
Biden is.
It's true. It's unfair.
Joe Biden height.
It's prejudice Six. Against little men like me.
Really the last short president, that's, you got to go back a little bit.
Clinton's not a tall guy, is he?
Cleveland.
All right, we're way off the track.
Denver and Washington.
Okay.
What a game.
I honestly came out of watching the Washington Green Bay game thinking that Washington's offense, you know, that all the red zone meltdowns were totally fun to watch. And Taylor Heinicke, like, it's the mobility, and he's just completely unconcerned with just whipping the ball downfield. I like this
Clinton
idea.
Clinton was 6'2". Go ahead.
I like this idea of them, you know, battling tall presidents here, a bunch of tall Denver Broncos. But the Broncos were just a hot mess, and everything that you hired Vic Fangio for does not make any sense right now. They're what, the highest paid defense, playing like the fifth worst unit in football. Have a good time with that, people from Denver.
They're 26th in DVOA, and they've played the 25th easiest schedule. So they've played pretty.
That's where their 3-0 start came from.
Right, but that they've. But even since then, it's not like every week it's been a juggernaut. It's been the Browns with Case Keenum. And I know only 17 points went on the board there, but they could not get a stop. I mean, they basically were steamrolled by Case Keenum. They were steamrolled by the Raiders. They were pretty steamrolled by the Steelers. It's crazy how disappointing they've been on defense. This is kind of their last stand. I think if you lose to Washington at home to fall to 3-5, it just starts to feel very hopeless. And I was trying to figure out, why are they so bad? They have no pass rush, but their linebackers have been decimated by injury, where they're trading for Kenny Young from the Rams. They've been down to fifth and sixth linebackers. And it's become really cool to say, like, oh, off-ball linebackers don't really matter. We're not going to spend any resources. Watch the Jets lately. Watch the Broncos lately. Watch the Eagles lately. Like, those teams stink at that position. And they're getting flamed by running backs and tight ends who just can pick up 12 yards every play if they want. It's sad.
All right, Greg, close out the draft.
I will close out the draft.
And then we got some more games to get to, but apologies to the Washington Broncos fans.
I'll take the Bills Dolphins early.
Tough sitch. You should know, Greg, by the way, that Benjamin Harrison, the 23rd president. Martin Van Buren, the 8th president. 5-6.
There we go.
Shortest president, James Madison.
I mean, people didn't even know how tall they were back then.
Van Buren got in some sort of a duel with someone.
I mean, we literally had a disabled president and no one knew. So, you know, they were able to hide things. There wasn't, you know, it wasn't as much.
You refer, of course, to FDR, yes.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's a different time.
Let's the man was in a wheelchair. They kind of kept it away from the
public.
We
are not certain like half of them even existed.
There's a lot of what? They didn't exist.
Save it for the Heat and Light podcast.
No, I'm just saying, like
you don't think Benjamin Harrison existed?
I'm sure he. I'm not saying all of them. There's
all right, here we go.
A little sketchy.
Just some presidents didn't exist. I'm not saying that all presidents didn't exist. Just some.
That's
possible.
That's ridiculous.
All right, go ahead.
This is a big game. I know that the Bills are 13.5 point favorites. I am interested in this Dolphins team just because they're at an inflection point before this trade deadline.
Inflection point.
If they get blown out by the Bills, Sean McDermott's absolutely owned Brian Flores. They've won 5 straight games. The average margin of victory is outrageous. They're averaging way over 30 points. So this is a problem going back to 2019 even. If they get blown out right before the trade deadline, you just wonder what's going to happen. I've been really impressed by Tua as like a man, as like the way that he's handled this. Him answering those questions this week, I was impressed by. Like, he's handled this situation with a lot more class and grace than the organization he plays for, and he's improving. I'm not saying he's going to be like a great quarterback, but for a guy that's only started like 6 more games than Trevor Lawrence, I do think he takes an inordinate amount of criticism
for a
guy who looks pretty good. He's limited athletically. He has a lower ceiling than you would like at a top 5 pick, but he's playing pretty well.
I think that's entirely on the organization, though, too.
I agree.
Just the way, and you may agree or disagree with how they handled it last year with Fitzpatrick, because they were trying to make the playoffs, but by taking him in and out of the lineup, and then as soon as this season rolls around, we keep hearing about Deshaun Watson. Of course, we're going to view him as a guy that's on, you know, the hot seat before he deserves to be. That's just the way it's been. That's on the organization.
Oh, don't you think also, because I think he is growing, but that's not enough today from quarterbacks. Like, you need these plays, these wow plays, these physical moments that Kyler Murray gives you, that Justin Herbert gives you, that Patrick Mahomes gives you. And you don't, Tua.
But do you need that?
I do think I think in 2021, actually, like, young quarterbacks, especially when the organization is saying, hey, we have a continuous wandering eye.
Mac Jones is not going to give you those plays, but he's showing you more.
And the Patriots feel good about that pick.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm not saying it's everyone.
I know what you're getting at.
But Tua kind of just like should be like, that's what you thought.
In a perfect world, Tua was going to be like a Drew Brees-ish quarterback. That's who he was compared to. And you think about Brees as a young player, bench for Doug Flutie. His ownership hated him. You know, like, that a guy who, because he was short and because he didn't have a big arm and because his advantages took a little while to show up, and he had good moments early too, better than Tua start, like, you just don't totally see it. So I do think Tua could be better as like a 4 or 5 year veteran than he is right now. That's all I'm saying. And he has played better in these last 2 weeks.
He has these bad turnovers that kind of mar his games. But last week, to the point, he's barely played at the NFL still. You got to give him the rope to understand that stuff he could work through and hopefully get out of that funk. He might not ever. He might always be that mistake prone guy. But I feel like you've seen enough in his limited play to continue to investigate him as your quarterback, when the alternative in the widely speculated situation here is that you would dump Tua and bring in this guy that has all sorts of hideous allegations around him. Is like, is that a move you really want to make right now? Now, Tua, if
just
Tua's,
do it in the offseason. That's all I've been saying is don't do it.
I think that's what's
right
going to happen. I still feel like all the reporting, I still feel like this is going to end up not happening before the deadline. And I guess we'll have to do an emergency pod if it does, but potentially. But I just think, like, you got to let this kid finish the season. And if that means you miss out on Deshaun Watson, well, that's the way it is. And guess what? It's probably the best thing you could do morally anyway. So, whatever.
Right. I think this is a tough spot, though, because he's gone against two of the worst defenses in the league that he's looked pretty good against and still made some big mistakes. Now you got to play this cohesive Bills team who's a little angry, who's coming off a bye, who they were embarrassed defensively late in that game because they're just not used to giving up drives like they did. Like, this is a tough spot, and the Dolphins defense is equally or worse, you know, struggling compared to their offense. Like, third down regression has hit them hard. If they lose by 30 or 40, you could just see the owner doing something stupid.
Well, and also there aren't many in division matchups that have been more uneven than Buffalo and Miami. I mean, they've wiped them out under Sean, like, McDermott's, like, entire reign there. And I don't trust a team more in the NFL right now to bounce back from bad loss, bye week, in this situation than Buffalo.
It's fair to point out these two guys who were hired around the same time, you know, McDermott was a couple years earlier, but they're defensive coaches. And Brian Flores' defense is terrible right now. And his history of hiring coaches who he's cycled through has not been great, whereas McDermott seems like he has a very cohesive group who loves working there.
All right, let's take a break, and then we'll finish out week 8.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar!
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's quickly hit these last 3 games. We have the Philadelphia Eagles traveling to Ford Field to face the Lions. The Eagles, you know, it is a great stat, and we've kind of mentioned it at times on this show how the Eagles' offense does not pass the eye test when you actually watch these games in a lot of situations. They are kind of getting beat up badly, and then they have some late scores to make it look better. This from, I was going to say Roto-World, but it's NBC Sports Edge.
It's Roto-World.
I know. But I actually, when I sent in this little nug within my power rankings this week, I purposely put Roto-World. And guess what the editors did?
They didn't like that.
They changed it to NBC Sports Edge. Anyway, Jalen Hurts has scored 43.4% of his fantasy points in the fourth quarter of the season. And that's not like, wow, when they've been, you know, winning dramatically. It's a lot of it's been you're down 28-7 in the fourth quarter and you end up losing 27-21 or something. So I'm not totally into this experience with Hurts right now. And I'll say this as well. So they trade Flacco. They get Sirianni, gets Gardner Minshew. He's talking him up this week that he's a guy that they trust to move up to the number two. And it just, it would not be entirely shocking if Minshew gets playing time this year to me, because they might want to juice the offense a little bit when the game still is in hand. And I feel like Hurts is on, you know, he could be in trouble here.
I think you're right. If they lose to the Lions, I think that change could happen sooner than you would expect.
Yeah, I mean, there's like our friend of the show, Bo Wolf, I believe, mentioned that he thought the same thing, that you're going to see Minshew at some point. That trade seems strange when they made it, but it starts to make a lot more sense. And they've trailed the Raiders, Tampa Bay, Kansas City, Dallas, each of those guys by 19 or more points in games before, and some of them storming back.
Even Carolina, the one
right.
they won,
they're
they
total
were down,
garbage
they were
time
down
kings.
Big. Now, fair, to be fair, he played great in a comeback win there, but that even that game they were down big.
I mean, it's a season-long evaluation, but their defense has been a total mess. Fletcher Cox, you know, came out this week and he basically openly questioned like new coordinator Jonathan Gannon's scheme, saying it's not been aggressive, and it hasn't been. They allowed Derek Carr to complete 91% of his throws. The last four winning quarterbacks against them have completed 80 plus.
That's
not
crazy.
A good defense.
That to me was one of the bigger stories of the week that slipped under the radar because the Eagles are no longer an interesting team. Fletcher Cox flamed his coaches immediately after the game. I mean, he straight up flamed them. And that is a 10-year veteran, one of the great Eagles in their franchise history, who's won Super Bowls. And some of these guys who were around when they won the Super Bowl are thinking – Jason Kelce almost retired, thinking we came back for this. It seems like some bad vibes with the coaching staff and the players right now. And if they somehow lost to the Lions, I don't know.
Do you think, based on what you just explained, do you think that if the head coach got in front of the team – and started making a strained flower metaphor, that it would go over well? Play it, Ricky.
Oh, no.
You know, the results aren't there right now, but what's going on here is that there's growth under the soil. I put a picture of a flower up, right, and that it's coming through the ground, and the roots are growing out, and the roots are continuing to grow out. And everybody wants to see results. Shoot, nobody wants to see results more than us, right? We want to see results too. But it's really important that the foundation is being built and that the roots are growing out. And the only way the roots grow out every single day and they grow stronger and they grow better is if that we all put we all water. We all fertilize. We all do our part. Each individual coach.
Right, that's it.
Each individual player. Each everybody.
I think there's a lot of fertilizing going on the Eagles' offense. I'll put it that way. There's been plenty of fertilizer involved with the Eagles on offense.
The defense has been worse to me too.
No like, shortage of fertilizer.
Like they have talent. They are being tested, and I can just imagine guys like Cox listening to, and Kelce and Derek Barnett listening to this mess. Darius Slay, they got to win this game.
There's some Liz Lemon level eye rolls.
They need a win. The vibes are bad, and the blow up there could be, you know, I'm. They got to win some games.
The fertilizer, by the way, poop. That was it. And one the power rankings, I got the Lions at 29. 0-7, but fighting hard every week. This feels like
they're
a
winning this game.
I'm with you. Should we lock it up together? No, but I agree. Rams at Texans. The Texans are the worst team in football. They are 32 in the power rankings. The Rams, this feels like a walk in the park. Just stay healthy, get your 3-touchdown win, and say goodbye, Mark.
I do want to see if there's a chance we get Tyrod Taylor, just because they were like every number suggests they were so much spicier with him in the lineup. He's back in practice, but
Tyrod Taylor offense and spicy.
It sounds like one more week just because he's not getting the starters reps, but I think he might play again.
I think like even last week with Detroit doing all their trickery, enjoyable chicanery to the Rams, they still, before halftime, put together these 10, 11, and 11-play touchdown drives where Stafford finished like 17 for 23 with 166 yards, two touchdowns. It's hard to evaluate who the Rams are with the last couple of teams
they're
they
on
played.
This tour of the Patsy.
Giants, they... Lions, Texans. Yeah, I mean, but they've been shellacking them, and I view them as a fairly unstoppable passing game. They're like, Stafford has done – he's made Les Snead executive of the year.
I thought continues. That was his best game against the Lions. I know it was against the Lions, but in terms of the quality of the throws and the decisions that he made – and they were actually put in a tough spot offensively. They barely got the ball. They were facing a big deficit.
Early on.
And, yeah, they should roll, and they move on to 7-1 feeling good about themselves.
And finally, the Jacksonville Jaguars coming off their bye week after that win in London on the last-second field goal to beat the Dolphins, travel to Seattle to face – the Seahawks. Now, this game here, Mark, you have forked the Seahawks.
I locked up Geno. I blew it.
This is your last chance. There's a very good chance here, Greg, because he has flopped here as their backup. I'm sorry. This could be it for Geno. This could be his last NFL start. And in a lot of ways, maybe that would be the only... For the amount of time we've had to talk about Geno Smith on this podcast unnecessarily, maybe the penance is that you must lock Geno Smith up at home against the Jaguars.
I already did my lock.
We would allow you to.
Absolutely allow. I mean, it would really validate
Geno,
all of the Geno
stuff.
Geno
has gone undefeated against the spread this year in tough situations, covered both times against really good
coin
defenses.
Flips. All those coin flips.
Great coin flips. His PFF grade this year higher than Jared Goff, Sam Darnold, Ben Roethlisberger, Zach Wilson, Jimmy Garoppolo, Taylor Heineke, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. So this guy needs to come out here and compete and beat the Jaguars. Let him beat the Jaguars, please.
Can we win a game, Seahawks?
They should. This is a game about coaching because they have enough talent, and they got to let Geno throw the ball a little more. And they've looked a little better defensively since they've gotten rid of Trey Flowers, and they got the 6-DB look and Brooks and Wagon.
You know, like,
win this game big. I think people think the Jaguars might win this game, and I think Geno and them are going to
lock it up.
You really should, Greg.
You should. It's only fair.
I would be a moment of total power.
And I don't like moving. I hate changing decisions on anything. It always seems like it's a bad move to change decisions.
I do have a weird feeling that Lawrence is going to light up the Seahawks. He'll fire one off Jamal Adams' face mask at some point. He won't be perfect, but he will move the ball against Seattle and score points. And then you need Geno to score points, and that's just not a given since he's taken over. They are not an efficient offense.
Let him throw the ball on first or second down every now and then.
Greg, you keep saying that, but there may be reasons why they're not allowing that to happen also. But I'm in a tough place with Geno Smith because I discovered during research this week that we share the same birthday, Libra Power. So it's like
it doesn't matter.
Well, it matters to me. I know it clearly doesn't matter to you.
I mean, I honestly can tell you it does not matter.
You
don't care
about
right my near Baker Mayfield in the ranking. Right near Patrick Mahomes in the PF grades. Wow.
I'm looking at a list of like 18 quarterbacks that Greg loves. He loves them equally. So
they're all his babies. All right, there you go. That is week 8. Yes, again, Thursday Night Football recap. You're not going to want to miss it. Packers, Cardinals. Oh, the game of the century. I can't believe how that one played out. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure it was incredible. And Greg and maybe Claybon have the analysis. Or maybe me. You just never know. That's the
future. All right, should I text him now?
You want to call him? Put him on speaker?
Give him a call.
Eric, go for it.
Can you do that, Ricky?
We don't have like a phoner.
Here, just,
but you call,
just call him and just put him on speaker. And just if I could start the convo or you could start it. It's up to you.
Okay.
I think Dan should, but on Greg's phone.
Yeah, definitely coming from Greg.
Yeah.
Put it up by your
And you wanna say it? We can.
I just wanna think
please.
Maybe it'd be better for me as a third party to make sure
to broker it.
Yeah. Hopefully he picks up. Let's see.
Yeah, put that right in your mic there.
Goes straight to voicemail.
Yeah. It's like it went straight immediately, so you knew that he clicked it, the dismiss.
It's like, oh, this call has been
forwarded. Ooh, that was the dismiss.
Oh.
Should I leave a message?
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. All right, got to make sure that... Got to keep that phone info private.
The mailbox is full and cannot...
Oh, this is such a...
Do you think that maybe it's he did
well,
that on purpose,
again.
Too?
Just totally. Try one more time.
Well, what? He's going to be there now? No, he's gone, you know, right?
All right. Well, let's hope he's there. Patrick Claibon, who does excellent work for us whenever he's on the show. And then we'll be back. The television show, which is doing big numbers, like crazy numbers. I just got some, actually, from Stephen Manny in research, and Gravedigger gave me some of the data. And some of the biggest numbers that you would imagine for a show that airs originally at 4 a.m. on the West Coast.
I want to be more surprised, but I know how the show works. I know who's on it. I understand what we're competing against. It feels like a home run.
All right, good. So check that out on NFL Network. Set your DVRs. And then, of course, yes, the flagship show where we recap every game we just previewed here drops Sunday night. So make sure to be there for that. Halloween night. Ooh, we have to come up with our Halloween names. Remember we used to do that?
We can't just use those same ones that we came up with.
Remember Crypt Wrestling? What was yours? Mine was Dan Hang.
Dark Sessler.
Dark Sessler with a C, of course.
Right.
Greg was
Ghoul Rosenthal, maybe.
Absurd.
We need ones for Ricky Hollywood. Oh, Ricky Hollywood Forever Cemetery. Nailed it.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Let's go. Dan Hans is signing off for Quiet Storm. I really wish Patrick picked up there because we would know for sure.
He's going to be there. He said tonight. Yes. Very reliable.
Your night on
Quiet
the ring.
Quiet Storm, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.